And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story. Real talk about money, markets, life.
Good afternoon, Walmart customers. If I may have your attention, please. Will Mr. Clinton, Hill Gepstein, meet your party at the grocery entrance? Mr. Clinton, Hill Gepstein, please go to grocery entrance to meet with your party.
Now, it's The Real Investment Show, presented by RIA Advisors.
You know, well, welcome to the Financial Fitness Friday of The Real Investment Show. I was horrible as a child making prank calls and doing these kinds of things that we just heard. Because you get away with it.
Yeah.
Right? And I had one poor person that I called from the radio station and he won a new car. Almost killed this poor woman, right? Because I was like, well, you've won a new car. I had a voice synthesizer. I sounded just like you know, one of the good guys on WABC.
Yeah.
Whoever did that, it's genius. I mean, and, you know, someone at Walmart, I'm just going to get my job. Who's lost? Yeah. You know, I mean, that is classic.
Well, they probably sent little Timmy up to go tell him. So
No. A grown man did this.
Oh, really?
Videotaped it on his smartphone, and it went viral yesterday on Twitter.
It had to.
And after she makes the announcement, she looks at him and she says, now, if you don't hear from him in about 30 minutes, you come back and we'll do it again.
That's awesome. That is the best. How do you keep a straight face?
Well, you could, if you listen very closely, he kind of, you know, when it first starts.
These poor people are just trying to make a living. How dare you? You're my idol, mister. Well, you know, again, we are a little bit on an upswing in markets again. We expected, as Lance has been writing quite a bit, that we had this overbought condition in the S&P. And now we were going to pull back a little bit, which is absolutely normal. Market still has that positive tone to it, doesn't it, Danny? So I think it wants to go higher. But again, it's a pretty substantial resistance level to break above where we've been over the last, say, 22 months, 23 months on the S&P. So it's actually very natural to pull back, whatever the catalyst happens to be. So this is very normal as you try to create that resistance now becomes a support level for the S&P 500. So we'll see. Dow futures are implied open about 70 points this morning. Everybody is waiting for the November jobs report, and that is supposed to show a pickup in pace from October. And that's also because of, you know, there's going to be somewhat of a GM effect because of the strike. People are coming back. So we have expected to have added about 180,000 or more jobs. But again, you're more in the 140, 150,000 range. And eventually, again, as we pull people off the sidelines to work, we've done a good job, I think. I think you probably settle out at, 90 to 100,000, maybe, as your baseline number as we go forward here. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, you know, numbers are down substantially from last year. You know, Employers were adding 223,000 jobs on average last in 2018, and this year they're about at 167,000 a month. So, you know, we are seeing a bit of a slowdown, and it will be, you know,
I mean, there's got to be a point where you do crest, pull back,
correct,
sort of go into this next
the normal
phase of
part of the cycle.
Yeah, well, if whatever normal is with the Federal Reserve involved. But to your point, absolutely, as far as employers, I think you're at that point.
It is interesting, though. You know, we kind of expect a little bit bigger pullback. Didn't have a whole lot. You know, the one thing that spurred the market to kind of get out of its three-day slump was essentially Trump coming out and saying, oh, well, we are closer to a trade deal again now. Where the day before, he said, looks like we're not going to do anything until after the election. So, you know, here we go once again with the headline news. Now, a little bit of decent data here. We'll see how this impacts the markets longer term. Next week, we do get in, which Lance has been speaking about quite a bit as well, is, you know, we're going to see mutual fund distributions. And this will be something that we could potentially see a little bit of a pullback. It's typically short-lived, getting into the holiday sales. Did we get those numbers? Have they been finalized from what Black Friday and Cyber Monday?
We did. I've seen them. But I mean, obviously, I think the online sales are up. Don't quote me on this, but I think it was up close to, 30%. Yeah. I mean, it was a big number, which makes sense. More and more people going online.
Who wants to go to the mall or fight people on Black Friday? I mean, man.
Well, I think actually Black Friday starts 10 Fridays before now. I mean, let's put it this way. Black Friday is sort of becoming Gray Friday.
It's like October
1st. I don't think
it's
becoming a big deal anymore because I don't think the stores are as packed because they start these deals now so early. The one thing about this job report, something I've been talking about that I absolutely believe is going to happen, is wage growth is losing momentum compared with early this year. And again, you're looking at average hourly earnings at about 3% a year. And again, the point is that why that number is so important is wage inflation tends to be sticky inflation. In other words, when wages increase, they rarely go down. But I'm going to tell you, I think we're going to – I hate to say this time is different. But based on the Great Recession as a template, I can very well see large employers or employers in general saying, listen, you might have to take one for the team and take a cut. Now, right now, you're not going to see that because, you know, we need people, right?
Yeah.
But I think you can see that people are also valuing job security. So I really do think that wage growth – is really going to sort of stagnate here at these numbers. They're better than they have been, but I think I don't really expect some great shakes in these numbers as we go forward into the new year.
Well, and to your point, you know, I'm talking to more and more people who, look, we've been anticipating some type of recessionary period at some point, right?
Yeah.
The proof is in
what's
the pudding,
that?
So to speak, right? Well, that is right. And so here's what's happening is that you have the unprecedented amount of QE, the Fed stepping in, you know, global synchronized intervention still. And I think that this is something that's continued to push or kick this can down the road.
Absolutely. They've done a good job at doing that for sure.
And they've done a fantastic job at it. Now, what this means, you know, longer term, is this just making that, is it that snowball that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger? Mm-hmm. And so it's going to make the next recessionary period even worse. That could be one of the things that we see.
Yeah.
But I think that people do realize that and they note that, okay, things are potentially going to slow down. So maybe I will stay in that job. Maybe I will take it. But I tell you what, I'm talking to home builders. I'm talking to people who do a lot of different works in the luxury area, and they're booming. They're building homes. I'm looking around. It is still an interesting time. They said they haven't made that shift quite yet to where people are going to go back and remodel versus you know, continue to build and get bigger homes and things of that nature.
Oh, that's interesting. And wage growth for workers in low-wage industries have definitely picked up. If we get back, we're going to continue on this discussion in the Real Investment Show, the Financial Friday edition, here on 700 KCV, the Voice of Texas. We'll be right back.
Catch Lance Roberts' podcast later at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the Real Investment Show, Financial Friday edition. Hope you're all getting on those roads safely. I'm Rich Rosso, Certified Financial Planner with Danny Ratliff. And we're just talking about markets and fun stuff. You know, the one thing that where December's a good time to do is really to review a lot of different things, including the portfolio. Complacency absolutely creeps into this market when volatility is very low. And we feel good about things. When you're feeling good about things, that's the time actually you get a break, or what I call it, on the sea you're traveling, the water is like glass. You know a storm eventually will come. What the storm looks like, nobody knows, or the intensity of it. So it really is a good time for you to do that. The recession word gets thrown around a lot. And the one thing I always believe that recessions don't come when people talk about it every minute and trip over it every minute. Recessions come when you're not focused on them.
When you feel really good,
yeah,
right?
I have. There are a lot of people that predict. Last couple of years, we've had more people predicting recessions than I've ever seen. It would have been the most well-predicted recession I have ever seen. And that's just not how it works. Also, we have no clue. Every recession has a bit of a shade of difference to it. They're similar, but they're not. And I don't know. The difference to me in this one is, since we're at a 2% growth rate, which, by the way, for population growth is really pretty poor. I know we're the cleanest dirty shirt. We always talk about we are the shining star of the world, but yet our growth rate is pretty sluggish. You know, it's like me running versus you. I don't know if you're going to fall off a cliff in the next recession only because we haven't had this superheated growth rate. You know, it's like the water's been simmering of the economy. It's not boiling. Yeah. So, for it to go from simmer to something flat, to me means maybe just a low-grade recession. And I don't know what's worse, because to me, you have a low-grade recession that can actually simmer or last
much
for
longer,
a long period of time versus getting this big move out. You know, these big boom-bust cycles, we haven't really boomed.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you get the big bust. And that, so this next recession, whenever it's going to be, will be
lukewarm.
Very interesting to see where it goes. Yeah, it might feel worse only because you're stuck in a muck, you know? It's like last December, not that this was recession, of course, but we had a really rough December for markets that I think people have forgotten compared to this year, right? One of the worst since the early 30s. And I was sort of okay with it, only thinking that, okay, we cleanse it. We cleanse this system, then we come back. But again, that slower process to me is more painful that that was like a boom bust in the markets. But what I'm saying is that the economy itself has really just been sort of chugging along.
Well, Rich, I think the frustration that lies, especially around money management right now, is that, from a rationale standpoint, we know, everybody knows, the market has ran up much quicker than the economy. And that's been the case. Look, this is the longest bull market that we've had, yet it's been one of the slowest growth.
Well, generally, that's what happens. You know, markets are leading indicators, to your point. I agree.
But this one has gotten out quite a bit ahead of the economy in general, right?
You can thank the central banks, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah.
So that's where the heartburn comes from, is that, okay, we know something's not quite right. And usually what happens is nobody cares when the market's going up. When the market's going down, so it's like, well, things are much better. They shouldn't be down this bad, or it's not as worse. It's not as bad as we think. However, that's not always how the markets work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see a lot of momentum, from a technical standpoint, and that's continued. We're kind of in that trough, I guess, so to speak, where, like you mentioned, it's tough to get above that level of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to – the headlines are very misleading because we continue to hit all-time highs every 3 to 6 months. Yet we hit an all-time high, we hit a level of resistance, we come back down.
Mm-hmm.
We may get 1%, maybe 2% above that. We come back down, get back up again. And so it's very frustrating because it's just not in that straight linear line.
No, it's a wheel spin. And you have to keep in mind that the investing process over the next few years for advisors, for you, is going to be probably pretty challenging as you trade within a range. And that is one way to work off large valuations or big valuations in the market, right? Because stocks are so richly priced. When we talk about richly priced or overvalued markets, the one thing that we know is that alone is not a trigger for markets to turn. Markets don't turn because somebody just says, they're expensive, we got to pull back. There's got to be some other catalyst, and then valuations get recognized in the soup. Oh, well, by the way, valuations are always the by the way. But what you could see here is very low returns on your portfolio for many years. and people not maybe prepared for that. Now, if you're accumulating assets, you'll be frustrated. If you're in the distribution mode where you're trying to create a retirement paycheck, you might be more than frustrated. So when we talk about what is a strategy for an overvalued market, which is what you're in, if you are in distribution mode. And one of those things is we talk about this at our retirement right lane class, and you need to be aware of when they're coming next year. I've added a few new exciting things to it and more information that I think you'll find helpful if you're anywhere 3 to 5 years from retirement. And frankly, you're a new retiree, you'd find it very helpful. Is really adjust your portfolio allocation if you're aggressive. Because again, we don't know what the next downturn is going to look like. And if it's close to when you're going to retire, I don't think you can afford a 20% pullback. You might just be postponed again.
It's interesting. So, a lot of times we focus so much on those missed opportunities. Yet, what happens is, we talk about this frequently, is that you could chase 5% to give up 20. And in distribution mode, it's just not worth it. Now, having that so to speak, heartache again, is that you're going to have to say, well, you're going to have to be okay with missing out on a little bit of upside, knowing that you're looking for protection of assets, not necessarily growth. You don't get to the end of the road here at retirement and say, hey, let's start getting more aggressive. I need to make up for missed opportunities in the market or that I didn't save enough. You need to start thinking about preserving capital, especially in a time frame like this. So we talk a lot about, where markets are. We just talked about how expensive things are. It's typically what that is. It's a good indicator. It's a risk-reward scenario. And so Lance has done studies. You've done studies that show that when markets are expensive, it's time to start taking a little bit of chips off the table. It's okay. And then when they're cheap, you can start to get a little bit more growth-oriented during that time frame.
Yeah, so we find that many times people with their financial partners will get part of it right, where they're getting close to retirement and it's intuitively natural to say, hey, I'm going to decrease my stock exposure. I'm not going to worry about missed opportunities, which I think is smart, especially when valuations on markets are where they are or 23 times earnings or greater. Now, what never happens, though, is that we never see the allocation change. In other words, it gets static. If I'm in a 20% stock and 80% more fixed income and conservative investments, why 10 years in am I still in the same allocation? What if valuations have gotten better? What if I find opportunities? What if I'm in the groove of retirement and I can take more risk? In other words, your retirement's going to last a long time. You do not have to stay conservative. It's just when you're doing the prep work to get into that distribution mode and you're going to be focused on so many things, like we talk about on that first year of retirement, that black hole, that emotional wall you might hit because you're not used to this, right? Going into an office every day and meeting deadlines and all the stuff you're doing, and now that's changed. That's a big psychological hurdle. Not only that, you're going to want to micro monitor household cash flow. Where's the money going? So you don't want to be then worried also about that your stock portfolio is going to lose, maybe 30%, which it could lose in a bear market. That's the last thing you want to worry about. So I agree with you. You don't want to have this, hey, I'm trying to catch up and make big gains. It's more of, I need to protect at this cycle, but that does not mean I cannot change this allocation as I go forward into retirement.
Well, that's right. It's interesting. So this time of year, a lot of times at the beginning of the year, we typically want to focus and say, okay, how did we do this last year? Mm-hmm. Were goals met? Did you save enough money? Did you, what did your expenses look like? Where are markets and valuations? I did a plan and looked back from June just to this last week, as a matter of fact, and their plan improved dramatically. And it was based on two things. One, market returns were better than expected. Yep. And two, they had actually not spent as much money as they thought they were. And so it actually had a several percent point change in their overall chance of success throughout retirement. And that's going to shift. Now, usually big changes like that aren't made in a 6-month period, but those small behaviors, small habits generally are going to have a larger impact over the plan. So it's making small tweaks along the way is all part of the overall, health of your financial wealth and your plan. And I think that's going to be something that you need to take into account, especially this time of year. It's a good time for a little bit of retrospect.
It really is. And that's when you do a financial plan, you come up with a rate of return that's required for you not to outlive your money. Okay. So you have to realize that that rate of return has nothing to do with how bonds are doing or stocks are doing. It's really about how is your portfolio doing. We call it that your personal benchmark rate that needs to be designed. And that happens through a financial plan. Then you need to make your comparisons. Okay. It's an art, people. When you're dealing with variable assets like stocks and bonds to create a steady fixed paycheck, you need to be nimble and creative and think outside the box. It's not just a clean 4 or 5% a year that you can withdraw, as much as you hear about that in mainstream
rate.
Media. Hey, when we get back, we're going to talk about a few other things about early withdrawals and 401ks and all kinds of fun stuff here on The Real Investment Show on 700 KSEV, The Voice of Texas.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the Client Portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com. Welcome back. You know, if you don't believe that a majority of Americans are having a tough time saving for retirement, the median account balance for those 50 to 59 years old is around $63,000. Part of the problem is, and this is a recent bank rate study, the problem I have with, well, I have a lot of problems with 401ks and variable asset retirement accounts, but most important is all the ways that you could take money out of your 401ks, hardship withdrawals, you're buying your first-time home buyer to avoid the penalty, all this junk that we get to do that. We call that leakage. With pension money, where money is being put aside, you can't touch it, right? You should really not be able to touch 401ks, although I do like one of these new initiatives that I don't know if it's going to happen, where you can withdraw to pay for your long-term care insurance completely tax-free and penalty-free, because that to us is the financial elephant in the room as far as long-term care costs when you need help with activities of daily living. I see every day and talk to people every day the toll that this takes on caregivers, family caregivers who need to take care of parents, and their health is suffering dramatically. So when Bankrate did this study, about 51% of households, say earning $30,000 to about $49,999, had taken money early. In other words, the more money you have saved or the more income you have, it seems like you're doing a better job of taking early withdrawals where you're not doing it. So this problem we have, I think, in the industry, Danny, is we push people, push to save in a 401k before we have them say, get their financial deck in order overall, don't you think? In other words, like, why would I have to tap my 401k to buy a home? First of all, what is that saying about me being able to afford a home if I have to take my down payment out of my retirement account? Second, why don't I have an emergency reserve set up first, right? So there's a priority or a hierarchy of how you create a financial foundation, especially when you're first starting out.
Rich, I think this is a little bit of a conundrum in many ways, because everyone is pushed to put those funds in the 401k prior to building up that emergency fund. And I think a lot of it is, one, because it's so easy. You know, you go online, you look at your payroll, you make the changes, you can change your contribution rate very easily. It is less accessible. So a lot of times, you know, you see people, you start to build that emergency fund, life happens, you have to pull money out, and next thing you know, it's not there. It is that emergency fund, but you don't have anything else there. And you're just in that hamster wheel trying to put more money aside. So I think for many advisors or even the big institutions who have these 401ks, it's a lot easier to say, hey, put the money here. And unfortunately, there is that hierarchy of where you should put funds, right?
Because when you have 50% of the people that Bankrate survey taking early withdrawals for some reason or another, something's wrong.
Oh, yeah. Something's way wrong. Uh-huh. And you look at here we are again where it used to be, you know, you had to have 20% down to go buy a home. And I loved that because it actually made people stick within some parameters on, you know, the price of a home that you can afford.
And that's our rule here. Yeah. At RIA, we have very select financial guidelines on how much debt you need to take, how much mortgage you can afford. And we don't budge on it. And you want to break that. You come in and you want advice. This is the advice we give you. You don't like to hear it, but we want to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Well, so you hear these stories of somebody says, well, I can afford a $2 million house. Great. Okay. well, maybe on paper you can, but should you? Probably not. Uh-huh. And then you guys think about all the other, can you pay that mortgage? Great. But all the other additional expenses that come with that home. And then you don't have the emergency fund because you've taken all of your assets and put them aside into this illiquid asset, so to speak. But now you're seeing where people are getting loans for 5% down, very little. And it's unfortunate because it does get us into that mindset that it's okay to go out and get that bigger home. You deserve it. You know, you work hard. I get it. But at the end of the day, it's about how much you can keep in your pocket. And this is a difficult time because you're putting funds in the 401k and this is designed for retirement, yet you don't have the savings. There is a bigger issue here.
Now, not that I'm advocating this, but I do advocate putting money in Roth. But when you put money in a Roth 401k, you're putting in at least after-tax contributions.
That's right.
So if you did need to tap that part of the money, you can, right? It's after-tax. You've already paid taxes. So at least you're not getting, you know, slammed with that. But to your point, it's just too easy to take money out of a 401k. And sometimes you have, you know, as advisors, we have to tell people, listen, you cannot put money into the retirement account right now, or maybe you can do up to the match in a Roth 401k. But you need to get these other basics in order. And one of those most important basics is the emergency reserve, making sure you have enough cash. Because I met with a great young couple a few weeks ago. I mean, they're just starting out. They're in their early 20s. And they have a great heart. They are doing a lot of the right things. But some of the advice they're getting from other brokers is totally different than what I'm giving them, which sounds more intuitive, like max out your 401k. Well, they don't only have a month worth of living expenses in their retirement account. And they're maybe planning to move and do these other things. And I'm like, no. Why are we maxing out our 401k here?
Yeah.
Right, which is counterintuitive, but this is, you know, before you build a house, you put a foundation down. You want to make sure that everything you do, when that 401k money goes in, you got it in your head here, go, you got it, that door's got to close. Like, I cannot touch this money. What can I do around the periphery that prevents me from touching this money? And that's very, very important to realize. Now, the government's always coming out with ways for you to take more money out of your 401k. Most of them I don't agree with. Like, I do not believe you should take money out of your retirement savings for a home. Doesn't make sense to me, right? But maybe long-term care does. But there's got to be still a strategy to avoid an early withdrawal in your retirement account. We also see when people move money, like they leave the one employer and they go to another. And how many times have you seen this? Well, they'll go, okay, yeah, well, I'm not going to roll it over. I need the money. And they'll go ahead and take the distribution at taxed and penalized at 10%, right? Because they're under 59.5. And I'm like, no cash. I'm cash restrained. I have no cash flow. So this mantra of 401k first, put everything you have, that's a Wall Street story because that's how they make fees. You need a hierarchy of saving and have someone help you fill in those holes of where you are in that hierarchy, and then work toward making sure that 401k or that Roth 401k or whatever retirement account you're saving in does not get breached for any reason.
Well, that just goes back to the plan. The plan should help you create that hierarchy,
yes.
Right? And
right.
I think that's the difficulty is of doing a plan. I meet with young people, and a lot of times they say, you know what, I just can't do a financial plan. I don't know what the future holds. Well, that's exactly right. And here's one thing I tell everybody. This plan is living, breathing. It's going to change. What this is going to allow you is going to allow you to start figuring out where to put funds to make sure, one, you build a solid foundation. Two, you have some flexibility should life happen, which we know it does. And then three, this sets you up for retirement, for your objectives, the goals that you have. Now, put those pipe dreams down. Let's see how we can get you there. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that, you know, you're safe, secure, and then you have the opportunity for growth as well and the flexibility when you get to retirement that many people just don't have. So, you know, so many people have all their funds tied up in that tax-deferred account because all they've done is stick funds aside in that 401k.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't, even in their 50s and 60s many times, have the bandwidth. Should something happen, God forbid you lose your job, you have 6 months of expenses or 12 months of expenses, depending on, you know, what your household or your family situation is, that is huge.
That financial flexibility where the first thing you have to do is go right for the 401k. We saw this after the financial crisis, right? And I was hoping, and I sent emails, during that period of time when people were getting laid off, and it looked like they were going to be chronically underemployed or unemployed because it was almost as close to a Great Depression we've had, right? Mm-hmm. Why are you charging – why are you letting people get taxed and penalized on this money when they're already going through financial distress? We should have been able to relieve that process. You allow us to take money out for anything we want for the most part. Why didn't you let us take money out when we were losing our jobs? And you, so while we're down, you're going to go ahead. So taxpayers had to pay for the whole thing.
They're bailing everybody else
right,
out.
Right, taxpayers are bailing everybody else out. Then you're sitting at home because you just got laid off. You have no emergency reserve. You had to take money out of your 401k to live. And guess what you've done? Now you're taxed and penalized. That sucked, and it was the worst thing that I ever seen we ever do. And yet I can never still get an answer on it. Don't think I'm not going to bring it up again during the next recession. How dare you?
They're going to say, we need the dues.
Hey, we get back. I got some funny stuff with some other stuff that's bothering me. And we want to talk about the cost of a living adjustment for Social Security, how you're getting ripped off. But there's something about Social Security that you are going to love. And yeah, believe it or not, you are. Hey, you're listening to The Real Investment Show here at 700 KSCV, the voice of Texas. Stay tuned for our next segment, last segment.
Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at itunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve it. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
I want to be the very best, like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test, to train them is my cause. I will travel.
We're back. I have to tell you, the things we get upset about today are enough for me to scratch my head that I'm getting a balder spot. And one of those things, it totally took Brent's hair, all the stuff that's going on. The Peloton ad, when the husband gives his wife a Peloton bike, and everybody is all butthurt about it because have you read some of the stuff about this ad?
Well,
I mean, I am trying to figure out what the problem is with this.
Well, it's because she was only 116 pounds, and so evidently it implies that she was overweight, I'm assuming. Well, and so she went to 112. Is that what the hang-up is?
But the point is the ad doesn't even say anything about her weight. I don't even know where this comes from. All these narratives from this one ad are amazing to me. Why doesn't he wrap the bike? Why isn't there a bow on the bike? I mean, crazy, crazy stuff. Why isn't she spending time with her child on the floor as opposed to on the bike? She's a horrible mother.
Well, what,
and what's he trying to say to his wife? She's fat? What is going on? I mean, it is ridiculous.
It's so interesting, though. Take a look in the mirror. I mean, these people are calling somebody, why aren't you spending time with your children? Why aren't you doing this? Well, what the heck are you doing here? You're sitting here commenting online about something that has no negative or positive impact on your life whatsoever. The whole thing's frustrating.
Well, the point is,
the world we live in, Rich.
It really is crazy that this is considered some sort of sexist ad. Actually, I think Peloton has a market. It has a market for people that are already in shape and want to maybe take it to the next level. I don't think it's looking to tackle people to make transformations more than how do I take my workouts to the next step, the next level. I mean, the commercial that really ticks me off is the guy that buys two trucks, one for him and one for his wife. The black one and the red one.
And she runs,
and she runs
the
down
truck.
And she goes to the black one. I love it. But the red, I love it. But that, I love it. And he goes, okay, well, you got the black. Well, I bought you the darn red one.
I like red.
Okay, but that's what he says. Yeah. I give up. Okay, first of all, how are you spending all this money on trucks? Okay, that pisses me off. Then,
well, have you seen the price tag?
That's the point. Is these trucks are about $70,000 each. What are you doing there?
$100,000 worth of trucks.
Why aren't
that driveway?
You funding your retirement account?
Yeah. Because we can do it on a 10-year loan,
okay,
Rich.
But
it's so easy.
But
these
I can read into any ad that's out there.
Well, look, they're there to sell people. Something.
You just take the ad for what it is, right? So Sean Hunter is the man in the holiday ad who gives his wife the bike. And he's actually a part-time actor. He's an elementary school teacher. And he's got to defend himself because he's like this face of evil. This clean-cut dude is like, he says, my friend texted me today declaring that I am a symbol of the patriarchy.
Oh, good grief.
And he goes, what are the repercussions? Am I ever going to be acting again? Here's this poor guy in a flannel shirt, right? Yeah. He doesn't even say a line. He just gives his wife a $2,000 bike.
Why is he wearing a flannel shirt? Do you know what that means?
What is he trying to say to her? I mean, again, it's getting a little bit ridiculous, and you all got to get over yourselves. Not anybody on this station, by the way. I am sure of that, okay? It's silly, silly stuff.
Well, we see it for the entertainment value that it generates.
Well, last night I watched the Charlie Brown Christmas, and I'm trying to figure out where and there people are going to get upset.
Oh, they will. We watched that as well with the kids, and yeah, mm-hmm. It'll happen.
Goodness gracious. I mean,
I think they said God and Jesus, so I'm sure it'll be banned before we know it.
I don't know. All I know is you all got to stop getting, again, not you guys, not you people who listen to this show. Your friends, let them know. Get it taken care of.
You know what's going to trigger them about Charlie Brown Christmas?
What?
It's child labor. They're making those kids work in that cartoon. That's wrong.
I got offended when Lucy goes, dog germs, when Snoopy licks her. I'm like, how dare you? Dogs are cleaner than people. So now we're going to have PETA.
And
how dare you?
Was that a dog assault on Lucy?
I think it was.
Did Snoopy assault Lucy?
Oh, boy, I'm telling you. It's one of those things. Well, listen. We can't control this, but again, watch the ad on the Peloton ad. It really is what it is. It's not a bad ad at all. I think people get jealous about a $2,000 bike. Anybody out there want to get me a $2,000 bike? I am open for it, so I take gifts.
You know what?
Connie says no, I say yes.
Well, the problem is
you're going to spend $2,000 on a Peloton? Do you realize what a nice bicycle that you can ride outside would get you for $2,000?
You
want
to ride a bike in Houston and maybe not live to see another day?
Well, you have to take it out into the county.
Yeah, that's
well, even there,
that's true.
It's pretty sketchy. I've done that for years.
And $2,000 buys a nice bike.
I get it. I get that, too. But
The Peloton's for somebody who's short on time. You want to work out, get a workout in. The problem that many people don't see, though, it's all those things like, Rich, we talk about when you buy the toys or all the things that are associated with it.
Oh, you got to get the videos, right? Because that's $38 a month.
Yep,
and who knows what else is added on to this bike, right?
That's right.
But again, it's really designed for a certain market that has discretionary income, mm-hmm. and they want to take their biking to the next level. Every one of those commercials, everybody's perfect. The men and the women on these bikes none of them need it.
Yeah.
It's like every Peloton commercial is not showing you, it's not for slim fast,
right.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is for someone that is really trying to tone and push themselves.
Well, I'm just going to throw this out here. $2,000 buys a very expensive clothes hanger.
But that is the point that I'm trying to make. I don't think people who buy Peloton bikes are looking to do that. Mm. I think they're taking it to the next level. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're going to have to wait and see overall. So one thing we have to keep in mind if you're taking Social Security is you're going to get a 1.6% cost of living adjustment next year. And that's not very good. But again, it's just based on what we're seeing as far as cost of living adjustments. Now, Social Security legislation is under debate in the House, and I've written about this, about you really are using the wrong pricing index or inflation index for older Americans. It really should be the price index for the elderly, although it's nobody's going to like that term, but it's CPI-E. So you would see a much greater benefit over time because older Americans are spending more money on health care and other things, right? Their cost of living adjustments are generally going to be higher. So, for example, if the CPI-E was going to be used for next year, you would have had a boost of 1.9 versus 1.6 Social Security recipients are getting.
By Social Security, right? It's one of those moves that, you know, clearly if you look over time, I think the study showed since 2015, you would have had a 2% increase if compounded.
That's right.
Which is fairly substantial. And so by using the CPIW for urban wage earners and clerical workers, there's a big difference if you look at young people's lifestyle and what they're spending money on versus somebody in retirement, which we know healthcare is very expensive. It is continuing to inflate at a much quicker pace than anything else.
Right.
So we're at a stage where they can say, well, they can keep more money in their pocket. Essentially, you're in the Social Security Trust. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's
there's so many different things about Social Security that have not changed. For example, you are taxed on Social Security. Your full retirement age and taking Social Security, depending on your modified adjusted gross income, and that also includes taking money from your traditional 401k or IRA, which was pre-tax but now taxed as ordinary income, anywhere from 50 cents to 85 cents on the dollar. But when you look at those levels of where you're taxed, I think what is the high end for married filing jointly? Is it 44?
So if you get over 44,000, then you're going to be taxed.
But they have not inflation indexed that for the last 35. It's never been inflation indexed. No. So what you're doing right now is you are really taxing more of the people that probably need the money more than, say, someone that's got a pretty nice retirement bucket, right?
Correct.
So the cost of that tax is falling more on
the lower middle,
versus, hey, we need to index it. Now, I'll tell you, there is legislation out there to take that 44,000 to 100. I don't know if that's ever, at least that's what it would have been. Or I think, actually, let me take this back. They're looking to take that level to like 50,000, so or 60,000. So they're trying to maybe inflation adjust this number as far as how you're taxed on Social Security. And by the way, that would help a majority of retirees as far as what their retirement income is going to be overall.
That would be fantastic if they did. Now, we need to take a look back and see all the legislation that's out there for this year that's dead in the water.
I know.
You know, the Secure Act, the Bennies Act. There's so many things that would be beneficial.
Think about it. Really simple.
Yeah.
Oh, that we can't even get done.
Very simple. It, you would think that you would have bipartisan support. Unfortunately,
for Medicare enrollment,
not. Yeah. Just simple stuff that we should probably be doing anyways, that you shouldn't have a bill that's actually going to help with this. Just transparency. Unfortunately, we just can't get past, I guess, what's most important.
If you can't pass a bill that takes away all these multiple enrollment periods for Medicare and makes it so confusing to help consumers and voters, I don't know. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, that should get bipartisan support immediately, but we can't seem to get it. We can't seem to get it done. It's really disappointing.
It's very disappointing.
One thing people don't realize is that, the COLA sort of stinks, cost of living adjustment, but there's something called the National Average Wage Index. That index determines these bend points and indexing factors that get you. When you pull your Social Security statement, you have something called PIA, right? Your primary insurance amount. That is telling you how much you're going to get. But to get to that number, there's all these calculations. Now, that number, those bend points adjust depending upon the average wage index. And this year, or for next year, it's going to be 3.62%. That means that people, say, under age 62 who have are going to get like a 3.62% increase in their future Social Security benefit. That's something we don't talk about, how these bend points get adjusted higher based on wages versus the cost of living adjustment. So you're going to see a nice bump in Social Security, say, if you're under 62 and your benefit is accruing for when you are at full retirement age. Whew. Is what we done?
I guess so.
Hey, you've been listening to The Real Investment Show here on 700 KCV. Next up, Chris Salcedo. We'll see you next week. Always Sunday in a rich man's world. All the things I could do if I had a little money. It's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.